having a little fun around here singing. You cannot hear that song and not sing. Right, Corinne? You just can't.
Absolutely.
You just cannot absolutely do that. My name is Perry Small. This is the Midday Show. You know, last year, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Great Migration. It was probably the different programming that we did last year was just nothing less than amazing. We learned so much. And so, guess what? And it, just think about this. Just 100 years ago, in many cases today, it looks like we are experiencing a reversal of the Great Migration and a return trip to parts of the country now far more accommodating to black aspirations in those places which once provided the greatest opportunity. Joining us on the live line to examine the cities where African Americans are doing the best economically in 2018 is Joel Kotkin. He is a contributor at Forbes.com. He covers demographic, social, and economic trends around the world. He is an R.C. Hobbs professor at Urban Studies at Chapman University in California, executive director of the Houston-based Center for Opportunity Urbanism, and executive editor of NewGeography.com. His most recent book is The Human City, published by Agate Press. Hi, Joel. Welcome to the program. Thank you for such great work.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I think it's a really very relevant topic, and I really like your linking it to the Great Migration and the sort of aftermath, which may have been sort of what you might call a surprise ending.
It is a surprise ending. We talked to some amazing people and their journeys and their families and why they came here and how we were, especially in Chicago, how you built this huge black middle class. I mean, this was the promised land, Chicago. You could work at the steel mills. You could work at the stockyards. You could make good wages. You could buy you a home. You could send your kids to parochial schools if you wanted. You could go on vacation. You could buy investment property. And guess what? That's all gone today.
Well, that seems to be increasingly the case. I mean that in some cases, it's in some areas, like, for instance, here in California, where housing prices are so high, it's in many ways worse. And in many of the cities in this country where there have been historically strong black communities, take San Francisco. San Francisco, by some estimates, has about half the African-American population it had in 1970.
Right.
Seattle, Portland, and even in L.A., you know, which had a very big and prosperous, you know, black middle class.
Yeah, but you don't even have, there is not even a black political base there anymore. I mean, they're just kind of non-existent.
Yeah, well, because I think what's happened in some cities, obviously the huge migration from Latin America sort of, sort of tilted things a lot, and fundamentally, the places where African Americans did best, like here in L.A., mm-hmm. it was really the aerospace industry. When I was working on what happened after 1992, nobody made the connection that thousands and thousands of African Americans with good jobs at defense companies lost their jobs, and those jobs were never replaced.
Really? Now that has never come to my attention. What has come to my attention, because I'm talking to you, I was looking at a piece on Sunday morning with Jane Pauley, and you have professors at the University of Santa Barbara who are living in their cars and RVs because they cannot afford any type of housing to buy homes now. And, you know, and I guess, you know, in the wake of the floods and the mudslides, housing is a pretty big commodity right now.
Well, and what it really affects, and we find this both for African Americans and for Latinos, mm-hmm. is when you have these high prices, the only way you buy a house, basically, is you have to have either rich parents or rob a bank. Mm-hmm. So what tends to be happening is those people who have multi-generational wealth, who tend to be either Asian or white, they can still get into the market with a struggle, but they can get in.
Okay.
African-American families and Latino families, generally speaking, they don't have parents who can write a check for $80,000.
Right, for a down payment.
Right. So what happens is we're finding that the California housing crisis, for instance, and the same thing's true in a lot of other places, it's affecting everyone, but it's affecting African Americans and Latinos far more. So the home ownership rates in cities like let's say Dallas or Houston are 10-15% higher for African Americans than they are in cities like Boston or Seattle.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because I don't know a lot about the Pacific Northwest, and I actually cannot wait to go to Portland. I love that sketch comedy show Portlandia, so I'm going to get there so bad. But what was the African American population in the Pacific Northwest, and is it dwindling like you see going on in California?
It's in some cases stagnating. It's certainly dwindling in the cities. Now, where the historic African American communities, like I believe the Albina district, for instance, in Portland, these have begun to disappear. When I lived in the Bay Area for a while, and there was a thriving black community for instance, the Fillmore district. There's not much of that left. Fundamentally, what's happening is when the real estate gets to be valuable, then the minority communities basically have to leave. Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing is African-Americans, middle-class African-Americans, let's say, who are going to make $100,000, $110,000, let's say, family income, they can go to Austin or Charlotte or Houston. And live very well.
And live very well, yes.
And there are quite a few whites who are doing the same thing, particularly younger people.
Right.
The situation of African Americans and white millennials is not all that different. The same trends are affecting both. But what's really fascinating is that the South, with its horrible history in terms of race relations, has now become the land of opportunity for African Americans.
That is incredible. I mean, you were talking about in your piece, you were talking about they are in Austin. They're going back to Memphis. They're going to Nashville. They're going, and if they're not going there, they're going to Virginia, and they're going outside of Maryland because, of course, you have the federal government there. Great jobs, for middle class, people. I mean, these people are living very well. I know African Americans are living very well, Prince George County and, and surrounding areas like that. But this is, this is all over the country. Has it ever moved this quickly like this, this kind of shift?
Well, I think that, and we talked about this in the Forbes piece, the periods of time. It's certainly accelerated after 2010. But Jim Johnson down at the University of North Carolina has been tracing this movement, particularly out of L.A. to the South, for at least 20, 25 years. So we knew that some of this was already happening. But it has accelerated in recent years. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that housing has become so much more expensive. And also middle-income jobs are growing fastest in places like the South. And what you get in many places, let's say here in California, are very high wage jobs and a lot of low wage jobs. And a lot of African Americans and Latinos are saying, well, I don't want that future. I want to have a house. So, it's such a tragedy because, there was such vitality, in many of these communities.
Yes.
If you look at, here's a great irony, two greatest African-American political figures in California over the last 30 years, Willie Brown.
Yes, and the Speaker of the House, former Speaker of the House. And
Mayor, Tom Bradley.
And Bob Bratton, yeah.
yep. and you know who was our mayor,
yep.
and they came from the South and moved to L.A. They mm-hmm. were part of this great migration. I mean, the bulk of that migration went to Chicago and New York and
right.
Baltimore, but a significant group, particularly from Texas, came to California, Texas and Louisiana mostly. And now that process is sort of is beginning to reverse. Now, there are many successful African Americans who, particularly older ones, people maybe in their 40s and 50s, who got into the market when it wasn't too expensive. They're still doing reasonably well. But I'm very concerned about what the future of the African American and Latino communities among young people, and how are they ever going to be able to stay here?
Well, now this is the other thing, Joel. So what I did notice that there is another trend that specifically better educated African Americans and with great paying jobs, they might be in tech or something like that. They are going back to these cities. It's just not commensurate with the numbers of people that are leaving. They're still going and are attracted to these beautiful places, but there are more people leaving, black people leaving than coming in, right?
Right. No, they are definitely coming they're going to cities that are, you know, that have lots of good jobs,
mm-hmm.
but in which the price of admission is just not so high.
Okay.
And so, like, for instance, Atlanta, which came at the top of our survey, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., these are areas where there are lots of really good jobs. And the African American community is still, you know, a powerful presence politically,
right.
socially, culturally.
Right.
In some of these cities, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, on the West Coast, and places like Boston, those communities seem to be either stagnating or in some cases actually becoming smaller.
Hemorrhaging. All right, then we're going to take a break. 10:47. We're talking to Joel Kotkin, and I'll take Perry's call when we come back. 773-591-1690. Stay with us. 10:50 on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON at 11:30, guys. TV1 is premiering its highly anticipated social justice limited series, Two Sides, on Monday tonight. And we're going to have a guest on to talk about it, so you don't want to miss that. We've been talking to Joel Kotkin. He's been doing some great work. The cities where African Americans are doing the best economically, 2018. I had a friend that recently went to Atlanta. And I just want to tell you, Joel, we've got a real interesting dynamic here. Black people are being shut out of every construction job, every kind of well-paying job, even in City Hall. I mean, where we were able to build a middle class, it's very difficult now. And so Chris Kennedy, yes, of the Kennedys, who is an Illinois gubernatorial Democratic candidate for the governor, he basically came out after a narrative that has been on WVON. We've been here for 53 years, WVON. I mean, even African-American radio is almost extinct. We've been here for 53 years. So he made a declaration, a bold declaration, that Mayor Rahm Emanuel, developers and the powers that be are actually trying to move African Americans out of the city. So we used to look at gentrification. We used to look at gentrification by race, right, Joel? Now are we looking at it differently? Is it race? Is it class? Is it economics, all the above? What is it today? If you could say what gentrification means to you today, what does it mean to Joel Kotkin?
Okay, well, the part of gentrification that's difficult is when the government makes a policy decision to push the process without thinking what the impact might be on the people who are already living in those neighborhoods. So, for example, whether it's a conscious policy in terms of race, I probably don't think that's the case. But what I think it is we only want these kinds of jobs. We want this kind of housing, and we want to attract a certain demographic, which
right.
is generally highly educated, upper middle class, tends to be overwhelmingly white and Asian.
Okay.
We don't even want the middle skilled jobs. You know, when you look at like the corporate relocations in Chicago,
right.
they crow about them. But these are 100 jobs, 200 jobs.
Yeah, McDonald's moved its headquarters back to the, you know, this the West Loop proper in Chicago because they thought they'd had a better pool. You know, they want that demographic that you were talking about, white, Asian, highly educated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're right.
And also, by the way, people who don't have families,
right?
Many of them are single.
Yep.
They're at a stage of their lives when they're more than happy to work 80 hours a week because you know, they don't really – I mean, this is what you do when you're in your early 20s.
Yeah.
This is exactly like, let's say if you get Amazon. Who do you think is going to go work for Amazon? They're going to be a bunch of young 20-somethings.
Hipsters.
You know, it's a hipster type, and I've done some work on this. The average person who goes work at a place like Amazon or a lot of the tech companies, it's a 22-year-old, and they're going to be there for 3-4 years. They burn them out, and then they leave, and then they go somewhere else.
Really?
Yes.
So you're telling me, I mean, even though these tech jobs and Amazon and it's all these shiny bells and whistles and, you know, they get to wear flip-flops to work and, you know, have these flexible, they burn them out?
Oh, yeah, definitely burn them out. I have a good friend who teaches at the University of Washington, and he trains people who go to work for these companies. And, you know, the whole – it's like a deal that's made. We will, you know, give you a great opportunity, something that will look terrific on your resume. We'll pay you okay, but given the cost of housing, you probably won't live all that well. But what do you care? You're 26 years old.
Yeah, you don't mind living with five people you don't know.
Exactly. So what we also see is a demographic. Now, where I think these companies are making a mistake, and I would argue cities are making a mistake, is they don't realize that a middle class, whether it's African American, Hispanic, or white, or Asian, is the bulk work of any city.
Right.
And if you want to have social stability, you have to maintain that middle class. You know, right in Chicago, you have one of the best analysts of this whole process, Pete Saunders, who is in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
Pete and I work together, and you know, this is exactly what's happening. You're seeing a policy that is really about. They say, well, we're going to make denser neighborhoods. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to take out a relatively affordable housing stock and replace it with an expensive housing stock.
Well, that's what's happening around the University of Chicago in the Woodlawn community, which was pretty notorious. It was underserved. It was dilapidated. Just in a matter of 3 years, I've just seen leaps and bounds differences. Let's go to Perry. Hi, Perry. How are you today? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Perry. Hello to you and your guests.
Thank you.
Homesick today, so I got a chance to listen.
Oh, good.
And you know what, Perry? You guys touched on it already. It seems what's happening in Chicago is we may be losing a lot of people, but has anybody done any type of research on the influx of jobs that are coming in from these low-wage, right-to-work states, particularly Florida? And I think I've seen the most from Florida. And you have employees working in these places, and they're like, well, that's not right. You can't do that. That's not legal. And it is legal because their business, the corporate headquarters, is operating from a right-to-work mentality,
okay,
which means they're not going to pay you anything, and they're going to do what they want to do. So the influx, one industry that is never talked about and was a hub for Chicago was the call centers. And it produced, the phone companies, the utility companies, and other businesses produced a solid middle class. You may not have started, but after 3 or 4 years, if you could see yourself moving
up.
Yeah,
well, those days are gone. Claudia, I'm going to take your call real quick before we let Joel Kotkin go.
Oh, yes. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that that's one of the reasons I don't want Amazon coming. One, I just don't think it's going to give us a return on our investment.
Mm-hmm.
With the tax breaks, that money would be better allocated elsewhere in the schools and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But then another thing, I was watching some other shows, and they're saying companies like Amazon, when they move in, they also drive up the housing costs. which has caused a lot of people to, a lot of working class people to leave Seattle. And so I fear that it'll even further accelerate the black exodus from this city.
What do you think, Joel?
That's a really interesting point because, I personally think that it would be much better if Amazon went to some city where there was a lot of extra land and where the real estate pressures have not been that extreme. And the caller is completely right that what has happened is Amazon has been one of the forces, not the only, to drive up housing prices in the Seattle area to a level that middle-class families of, frankly, of any race, can really afford to stay there anymore. And they certainly, young people can't buy in, again, of any race. So, I very much support the notion that it is very dangerous to give so many benefits. I mean, clearly, Amazon is angling to get the most it can possibly get in incentives and tax rollbacks and all those sort of things. And there's a group of us who are trying to make the point that cities shouldn't go to war with each other.
Well, they are going to war. Joel Kotkin, it has been a pleasure talking to you today. I've enjoyed you so much. We've got a link to your study on WVON's Facebook page.